Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Good Friday afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. Let's talk new colonialism today.
Hey!
I know, right?
I hope you watched the video I sent you, the last thing I sent you.
Macrobia?
No, Neutrality Studies by Pascal.
Yeah, the thing is I'm running low on power.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
look, someone made a video on social media. You know how, especially TikTok that allows for stitching and duetting someone's video. If you just, you can comment either via, just typing a comment section in there, under the video, or you can just stitch it, just to provide commentary, which will be like a separate video of your own on the topic that you basically wanted to comment on. So there was a time, where we lived in a golden age. Yeah, where people cared more about others. So one guy stitched that video and said, no, you're forgetting something. Mankind have never been at that time. You have to understand, if we were to follow the biblical account of the history of mankind, they were, at some point on this planet, there were Adam, Eve, and then the two sons. Yeah. They didn't even make it to five. One of them already killed the other.
Very true.
Yep.
Very, very,
yeah.
Very
so,
true.
So when you say, when you hear, speech like the one that we're going to be looking at today, basically it's going to be our main source of reference. That's Marco Rubio's speech that came out of the Munich Security Conference. I mean, just last month, it was the Canadian Prime Minister's speech coming out of Davos. And now we're sitting here with Marco Rubio's speech. Both are scary in their own way, and they are scary in a way that the Canadian Prime Minister's speech is both scary, mostly economically, but slightly politically. Now, the one for Marco Rubio is just straight up, well, diabolical. Now, here's the thing. It's a good thing that Rubio himself has Cuban roots, and he references.
I was gonna laugh now.
No, look, he has Cuban roots, and he's talking about the 1960s as if they were the glory days for everyone,
especially Cuba.
Especially Cuba.
Do you know what's even? Do you know what's even more funnier?
Yeah.
About Rubio's particular comment or his speech. The same guy, the particular video I sent you on neutrality studies, Pascal, he immediately after Rubio's speech, like in that week of when the Munich Security Conference was still ongoing, the guy he interviewed immediately after that was an American, but you can hear that he's got an American accent with what seems to be a Russian accent associated to it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Pascal's particular interview about that engagement was literally based upon, okay, so from an American perspective, what does this look like? Yeah, the guy's name that he interviews is Stanislav Krapivnik. Now, Stanislav, and here's a weird observation, Helmut. Okay, it's not a weird observation in terms of, obviously not to sort of like put myself in the weird observer status situation. But the funny thing about anything international relations related regarding Americans, and this is something I observed specifically, is that most of the international relations experts, historians that you find around the world on internet discourse, on global discourse and platforms, said most of them have a military background to them, meaning they were either in the military or they were in some other scenario in an intelligence/military capacity.
Yeah.
So Krapivnik is one of that, because Krapivnik was a former American soldier from, I think, from the Afghan or the Iraq theaters in terms of American, foreign policy distribution, should I rather say. Now, Krapivnik describes something very fascinating, that Rubio, which he literally did in the speech,
mm-hmm.
is that Krapivnik identified Rubio's particular lineage. You remember you started from the 1960s.
Yeah.
Rubio literally identified someone from Spain and someone from the Italian island of Sardinia. Those are the other two islands, island territories of Italy, of mainland Italy. So you've got Sardinia and Sicily. And both of these two people that Rubio mentioned, which is his supposed ancestors, were of some sort of a nobility class in a, sort of like noble setting. And obviously you and I know, possibly because...
Like the part of a high society.
Yeah, so Rubio's particular lineage has direct linkages in some sort of a nobility class of, or an elite class system of Europe of past, which could have been the 1800s Europe, because the assumption is that what Rubio was describing there was that these were two people from the 1800s and not the 1700s of Europe.
Yeah.
So, meaning that he can literally draw a line at least 150 years in that direction, directly for Rubio. Krapivnik comes and says, I am also of a lineage of sort of like lesser nobility in Europe that also had to move from Europe specifically to the United States because of what happened in Europe was that there was this overcrowding situation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what usually happens, Hamoud, when you have populations booming in a specific zone where property is not accessible, there's no land to go around to say, hey, listen, go out there and go live there outside of the city or the town
yeah.
because space is cramped here. What happens is they ship you off to another part of the world. But when did something like that happen?
It rings a lot of Australian bells.
Not just Australia. It rings South Africa. It rings Namibia.
Oh, yeah.
It rings the whole of South America. It rings the whole of North America. Probably the only continent that has...
Yeah, basically the whole of North America.
The only continent that seems to have survived this is from the Middle East all the way to Japan. They seem to be the only guys that have survived this.
Okay, I understand Asia, but the Middle East, was this... I think you just have to look at that when they were doing all this transporting. Is this before or after the invention of Sanskrit?
Both. Remember, you still have to take into consideration, obviously, the dispute around Palestine.
Yeah.
And we're not...
The Balfour Declaration and all
the
that.
The Balfour Declaration that began from a secret restaurant meeting...
Yeah.
In 1918, it was slightly earlier, 1911 or 1910, a secret restaurant.
Wait, is that old?
Yeah, bro. It literally happened. It's either 1918,
yeah,
or it's literally just before the First World War, because it's literally as this British politician and this local London Jewish rabbi
mm-hmm.
had a engagement, and this rabbi who had a Sunday braai or a Saturday braai with his friends from the community, they all came up with this quackpot idea there in London that, hey, you know what? Let's go and also call ourselves a country or get ourselves a country
yeah.
somewhere there in the mentioned religious scriptures known as modern day Palestine in 1910. And the British just went and said, okay, fine. That's where the Balfour Declaration comes from. It doesn't come from the Nuremberg trials negotiations, it literally yep. comes a lot earlier than that. So, and Palestine is classified also as a disputed territory. But why are we talking about disputed territories, dear listeners, so that you just know for Helmut and I's particular case, and before
yeah.
that, we've got an ad break coming up on us.
Get your glow on with ShopRite's hair and beauty range. Visit your nearest store and buy everything you need to nourish your skin, love your hair, and look your best. Keep on shining with deals like
Darling Yucky Braids, all variants, any two for $24 Namibian. And 1 liter organics shampoo or conditioner, all variants, for only $79.99 each. Don't miss out on our great deals to get your glow on. Offers valid until 8 March 2026. Only at ShopRite.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko dite opoye ekukurile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge kwa Fanona, Monica Co, Eagle FM, Honoreta Timwe, Bali Heavy, Nola Natu, Heavy Bali No Heavy, Ileko Berewa, Nora Hetatu Natu, Bali O Hetatu Hatatu, Oma Filane, Eagle FM, The Eye.
Welcome back. We continue. Why are we talking about disputed territories?
Yeah, so. Now, this is how things get interesting, Helmut, regarding disputed territories. And it's a good thing when we analyze the speech that Rubio gave, because his was actually the first speech that day, literally to start off the whole Munich Security Conference.
Yeah.
And if you don't know, dear listeners, what the Munich Security Conference is, the Munich Security Conference was also the famous platform where current Russian President Vladimir Putin back in 2007 went and said, there cannot be a unipolar world anymore. Probably he was giving some sort of hints back then to us here in 2026 that watch out for one country deciding the whole world's fate and thus deciding how the whole world needs to move in terms of the future going ahead, which is a scary thought to sit with. But then you realize that's currently the picture that the whole of NATO is combating specifically. And when I say the whole of NATO, you know, in the sort of like caucus of the United States and the UK.
Yeah.
And obviously I won't go down that history lesson in that direction in terms of why I mentioned the United States and the UK is because, many historians and many economic historians have highlighted that why there was such a major tectonic shift, which we didn't see, but we're now seeing unravel, was because the UK literally relinquished much of its particular physical, colonial empire to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're asking what that is, literally, this was obviously woven through a system of, let's try and take the world from 1945 in a new direction. But it met a whole bunch of snags, and these snags are starting to sort of like advertise themselves a lot clearer. What am I talking about? So first things first, we start with Rubio's speech. Rubio steps up and starts praising 500 years of Western colonialism. Let me say it again. He praises 500 years of colonialism. Now, if you've never seen gaslighting in your life, Helmut, on an epic scale, with lighter speech. Fluid coming from a petrol tanker or from a, you know, that tanker, that petrol tanker truck, but you've just got lighter fluid loaded up into that petrol tanker, which is technically also a petroleum-based product, and there's one guy standing with a very small, he's standing with this very small lighter in front of the hose pipe that leads from that petrol tanker that has lighter fluid in it, and all he's doing is just gaslighting you specifically with that one little flame, but with that massive supply of lighter fluid coming from a petrol tanker. That's what Rubio came and did. Now, the most disheartening thing also, Helmut, is that from that particular perspective, Rubio literally came and told the world, as a United States politician, number three in the rank of importance from Donald Trump. He's Mr. Trump, then Vance, then Rubio. Because Secretary of State is Mr. Prime Minister in that, just in our understanding. That it's okay that the North Atlantic slavery happened. It's okay that the United Kingdom had the largest physical empire in the world, that it created ugly apartheid systems. It created ugly systems of segregation, which is the apartheid once again. It created ugly scenarios of, eliminating indigenous populations across the world.
Yeah.
There's a specific reason, Helmut, which I immediately looked up terra nullius for this conversation once again, because it was specifically one of the main concerns in terms of how colonialism also flourished, using obviously a not such an adequate term, because there's another term I wanted to use, but the colonialism element literally flourished. And he's literally talking about a discussion of civilization. Now, this is obviously where you need to put a peg in the talking point of saying, but I thought since 1945 we're trying to move into a new direction. What kind of a speech is this that's popping up? Then he makes a swipe at the United Nations, and I knew he was going to make a swipe at the United Nations.
Yeah.
Accusing the United Nations of a system that seems to only work for certain countries. I don't know who. But you know what I kept sensing throughout that 20-minute speech? Because it was just 20 minutes, video that I watched, the broadcast by Sky News. It was just a 20-minute part. The other 10 minutes obviously was like their conversations. But for the whole 20 minutes that Rubio spoke, I sensed that this was a swipe at China. They didn't swipe at Russia. There was no swiping at Russia.
But dude, you should know this by now. What's Joe Biden's party?
The Democrat.
If it was the Democrat, it would have been a swipe
at Russia.
Thank you.
Full on. It would have been a full on.
It would
swipe.
Have been a big one.
Yeah. Which helps to reinforce the point that the neutrality studies video that I sent you a little bit later after that, where Pascal is interviewing this Australian historian and former bureaucrat, Jeff Rich, where Jeff Rich also went and literally looked at this whole discussion of Rubio's speech, because Rich is obviously an Australian, so Rich is very aware of Australia's particular colonial role in terms of, how the origins of Australia came to be.
Yeah.
Rich highlights specifically, it's a very funny picture specifically to know and to cite that the United States, since 1945 up until now, Helmut, has been the most inconsistent party and country vis-a-vis against sort of like doing away with colonialism.
Yeah.
And because you would have one president. Okay, let me take a good example. JFK literally supported the South African, at that time, the South African military regime in Namibia against SWAPO's efforts.
Yeah.
JFK, before he got assassinated.
Mm-hmm.
Nixon comes along. Nixon then flips to the other, sort of like into a neutral spot. And now the South Africans no longer have this sort of like US-UK support anymore for whatever, because the South Africans called it the border war. Or they called it the Bush War. That's the other term. In Namibia, under obviously the ruling party's particular sort of like, let's call it propaganda for that matter, because in many, that's their communication strategy about their history and obviously of how they highlighted the war was fought.
Mm-hmm.
They highlighted was the liberation fight. Now, besides the narratives and besides the propaganda that obviously takes place, because there's a lot of South Africans on YouTube who are glorifying this war, for whatever reason. And then, you will find scary stuff on the internet. I'm telling you.
Yeah, I've been to the internet.
I have to hold back my fingers in terms of keyboard retaliation so many times that I look like someone that suffers from some sort of a joint disorder.
Yeah.
So I sit like this of anger. But then being sort of like a quasi scientist, you try to understand the perspective that this person is talking about. However, there's very few times where I actually switch off these things because I'm trying to look for the facts, things that I probably would not have known.
Yeah.
However, in that example I'm showing you now between two US presidents, and Nixon was the vice president for JFK, speaking under consideration. No, he was the vice president of JFK, Nixon. And then he won re-election immediately after finishing JFK's term. Is that you've got to look at the flip-flopping that the United States loves to do. And we even saw the flip-flopping happen between the Russia-Ukraine conflict.
I forget the Russia-Ukraine conflict. Just to go to, was it this or last week?
Yeah.
Wasn't that late last year, early this year, and they said we have obliterated Iran's nuclear capabilities. And now the script is up. We want to go in there and prevent Iran from building. Really?
Do you know why? That script is so topsy-turvy, so 6-7-ish currently. Sorry for making the 6-7 reference. Do you know why it's like that? It looks like why it looks literally like a jelly tot village or a gummy bear scenario,
mm-hmm.
where people will be asking, but you claimed you achieved some success back then.
Yeah.
What's the difference between then and now?
Yeah. How are we sure that, because if you lied to us then, you could be lying to us today.
Right now. Yeah. Which sounds very similar to who? The Iraq war. The whole Afghan anti-terror war.
Yeah.
With Pakistan and Afghanistan. I'm waking up this morning and Pakistan and Afghanistan are literally trading blows with each other because Pakistan doesn't, for some reason, in the first time in modern Pakistani history, they hate the Afghan Taliban who are assisting the Pakistani Taliban. I now understand why the Indians were saying, don't trust the Pakistanis in that neighborhood of Southeast Asia, no, Southwest Asia.
So there are two different types of Talibans, one coming out of Afghanistan, one coming out of Pakistan.
And guess who helps who? The Afghan one is blatantly and publicly assisting the Pakistani one to overthrow the Pakistani government. Now, when the Indians were shouting to the CIA and the MI6 and the whole world of anti-terror, deal with the Taliban in Pakistan and with Pakistan's own intelligence service, the ISI, because they are the ones who are protecting Al-Qaeda. They were the ones that built up Al-Qaeda. It was the CIA had to use the ISI to build up Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan against the Soviets. And it still was the ISI who was playing, who was the big dog in that neighborhood of anti-terror. And the Indians kept saying, since the 1950s when they had the borders with their own border dispute wars with the Pakistanis, when they broke up after the British Raj was broken up, was that the Indians kept saying, we don't trust the Pakistanis, specifically because of their non-democratic way of governance, their overly, their penchant for using the military to sort of like quell any sort of civilian, civilian discontent. If citizens of a country see no services are being conducted, there's rampant corruption, poverty levels are just, deprivation levels are increasing, and there's no end in sight specifically to improving the conditions of your citizens. Obviously, the citizens then go to the streets and protest.
Yeah.
No, every time when that happens, what does the Pakistani army do? They remove the civilian government and they install a military leader.
I've come to learn that the military is very holds a lot of dominance in terms of power in that country.
Yeah, Hamoud. Exactly that. Even the one woman president that Pakistan had, Amusad Putras Ghali, what was her name? Benazir Bhutto, who passed away in 2009 from a gunshot wound at a political rally.
Oh boy.
Benazir Bhutto, Helmut, was married to a general. So obviously, her husband would have had like the close reins that, you guys better vote. You better show up and vote and show your support. And obviously, everyone knew you don't mess with Benazir Bhutto because of her husband. Now, bringing us back, obviously, from looking at that particular sort of like chaotic scenario. But before we continue, we take another ad break, guys.
kapena ondando da falada Shoprite alu hoku kunini ondando da wapevi nipumbio a esiku ukiji omlogo dosuka ontokere your best choice kodora ethero mirango hetatu nani no sendo mirango wino we oshowa ukiji omlogo dorishi roa king roa forketata kodora ethero mirango hetatu na hamano no sendo mirango wino we ino futashi wulithe po Shoprite price thirikosu waga hetatu gama alita nuvo ko Shoprite akuke waimina already steady cook ko one Africa no mapaduro ku Shoprite and Namibia.
Welcome back. It's 5 o'clock on the dot. If you just tuned in, this is Homerun with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. And, we're just sitting having a good Friday with Marco Rubio's glorification of the worst time in the history of mankind for a lot of developing countries.
Yeah, it actually is. It actually is. Just before where I left off, Helmut.
Yeah.
Before the break. And I'm ending with that, India-Pakistan situation, Afghanistan situation. Obviously, taking us away, bringing us back to the core discussion that we've got, that we've got for today's discussion, is that Rubio's call was a contrast to what J.D. Vance did last year. Now, I knew, because of what Donald Trump and J.D. Vance had done at the World Economic Forum of last January, I knew that they were going to do the same thing, because I just had that feeling in my bed, in my gut, saying these guys are going to go do the same thing again at the Munich Security Conference of February 2025. Lo and behold, Vance does the same thing. Fast forward to 2026. Obviously, we had 3 January in between.
Mm-hmm.
We've had various kinds of announcements and stuff like the Iran bombing of last year, 2025 in between, and various other things kicking off as well. We get to 2026. Now, Rubio steps in there, and Rubio says, please, take pride, Europe, as being the forerunners of Western civilization. Please, Europe, take pride in the colonialism that you perpetuated for the 300, 400 years of Western civilization. Please, Europe, take pride in, for example, the building up the lesser known, not so good, that other term that Donald Trump used in his first term for developing nations, you know, the one that started with an S and Aiden ended with an E.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying Sitole.
It sounds a little somewhat similar.
Very similar to Sitole, but not Sitole. So, and then Rubio went on, and please, Europe, take pride in being the sort of like the ancestral roots for a country like the United States that I hail from.
There are a lot of things wrong with that speech, but I was actually, for someone that basically lives and breathes documentaries, one thing that I have learned is that for a lot of very powerful countries, especially because most of the information is communicated in the official language that we use here, English, so it's much easier for me to follow what's going on in the Western world than, for example, China and Russia, because they have different, well, China is Mandarin, I can't speak a word out of that, and my Russian is a little rusty.
Mm.
Actually, non-existent. Now, moving on. Now,
you're the one who went to Russian classes, Hamoud. As long as you don't make those Russian jokes here.
Have you seen those alphabets? They're wonderful. Now, the thing is, now.
At least you don't have to deal with 30,000 characters.
Why do you think I didn't use kanji? Look, the thing is, one thing I've come to learn about, the West is that, again, if you like history as much as I do, then you know that there's nothing that the US is doing is new.
Mm.
That's what empires do. The British did the exact same thing. The Spanish, the Portuguese, the French, they did the whole thing. They will only support an institution if it's benefiting them. As soon as they, they are not in control of the outcome of what that institution does, it's rendered obsolete. That's why the UN right now is under siege. From mostly a country, it chose to put a headquarters in.
Not just that. It's that country who's the brainchild for the UN's existence.
The reason why I'm making the documentary reference, it's because I have seen a lot of public officials coming out of the Western world saying a bunch of nonsense in news headlines and events like the Munich Security Conference. Mm. And then they get out of that office and they are featured in a documentary and they tell a whole completely different story. That was,
speak more rubbish.
Now, in a documentary, they are basically telling what you have been assuming this whole time. One such guy is Matthew Miller, the former spokesperson of the U.S. State Department.
Yeah.
When he spent the whole time during Biden's tenure saying, Israel has the right to defend itself. Yeah, there's nothing that Israel is doing is wrong.
Mm.
Yeah, and there is no war crimes going on in Gaza. And then he leaves that office at the end of the Biden administration. Obviously, Trump took over, and then he holds an interview. He's asked, "So, do you think Israel is committing war crimes?" And he's like, "Oh, without a doubt, yeah, he is." Now, at this point, you are going like, "Hang on a second, what's that nonsense that you are rumbling in front of the entire world through mainstream media?"
Exactly.
What the heck was that? And he answers that with his absolute honesty, which I appreciate. That when you're at that podium, you are not expressing your own analysis. You are expressing you are giving the opinion or the analysis of the United States government.
Mm.
Yeah. Now that actually makes a lot of sense when you think of it in terms of vicarious liability, because if I'm out in the field, for example, or when anyone of us here at Eagle FM, for example, is in the field, we are not there on our own capacity. If everything that we screw up there, the person that or the anything that we screw up there, who are they gonna call? Eagle FM is going to be held responsible because you are there in Eagle FM capacity.
Yeah.
You can't be there rumbling your own opinion because you are there. Now, if you wanted to go to the State House yourself, you could just pick up and go and see if you're going to gain entrance. Now, you are in there in whose capacity? Eagle FM. Now, Marco Rubio was at the Munich Security Conference on the U.S. government, especially the Trump administration's capacity.
Yeah.
Everything that Marco Rubio said is the agreed upon point of view of the moving forward in terms of political and global political and economic analysis of the U.S. government. That's what he was representing. Now, that's why I'm not gonna give Marco Rubio the credit for that. He did speak the words, but they were gone through by God knows how many intelligence and guys
and speechwriters
He was just there to speak the words. He didn't come up with them.
And office advisors and position advisors and all that other.
All those guys.
Yeah, all those guys.
Yeah. So now, everyone, especially online, is acting very shocked. Why would Rubio say that, especially those ones that don't agree with his point of view? Now, this is basically much, if not all, of the developing world. I don't agree with this guy. Why would he say something like that? Guy was just reading what he was given to go and read. And that's what you would expect. Take, for example, anyone that's going to represent Namibia at any event. They are not there just rumbling what they came up with. That's something that's expressed and agreed upon by the entire Namibian government.
It's checked and rechecked. Yeah, it's not just vetted and verified. It's done so as, okay, don't go do something too embarrassing, but rather do something that is actually impactful.
You are representing us.
Yeah, so don't go kick a bee nest or a beehive for no reason, but rather just sort of like shake the beehive just to wake it up a little bit. They might have been sleeping a little bit longer. But you are right, Helmut, because this was obviously a planned move. That speech was a planned move. Because, I mean, you don't walk in there without a plan.
No, you don't.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing. A lot of officials in public office, especially in a lot of powerful countries, believe me, they hold a different, they have a whole, they more often, a lot of times, they have a different point of view on a subject from their government. But that's like you differing with your boss. It's not very easy to do. Now, I'll give you an example. And actually, this is one of those painful foreign policy examples coming out of the U.S. This concerns Ukraine and Russia.
Mm.
Now, the war, like the bombs started exploding between Ukraine and Russia on February 24, 2022. That's when the whole world started going with what the heck is what the heck are these people doing? Why are they fighting? Can't you just settle disputes? And then you are looking at a lot of officials coming out of the U.S. government.
Mm.
And they seem to have this similar point of view with regards to, Russia is the aggressor, Ukraine is the victim. But now, just go back a bit. Go back a bit. Now, if you can go to 2008, this is something that Jeffrey Sachs likes to reference. This is a telegram that was sent by the then ambassador. By the then ambassador William Burns.
Mm.
I think it was the ambassador to Ukraine. You can find that on WikiLeaks. Now you know why Julian Assange was not a good guy to be around, especially for most of these guys.
Mm.
Now, this is from 2008, not 2022. This is what he is writing. He's just now. This is a man expressing his opinion with regards to the Russia-Ukraine tension.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's writing. Ukraine and Georgia's NATO aspiration not only touch a raw nerve in Russia. They engender. In other words, that's a fancy way of saying they cause. They cause serious concerns about the consequences for stability in the region. Not only does Russia perceive encirclement and efforts to undermine Russia's influence in the region, Monroe Doctrine type of point of view.
Mm.
Yeah. In the region. But it also fears unpredictable and uncontrolled consequences, which would seriously affect Russia's security interest. Again, Monroe Doctrine, 3 January, Venezuela.
Mm.
Now, experts tell us, now that's an ambassador talking. You would think he's the expert. No. He's speaking to experts.
Mm.
Experts tell us that Russia is particularly worried that the strong division in Ukraine over NATO membership, with much of the ethnic Russian community against the membership, could lead to a major split involving violence or at least a civil war. In that eventuality, Russia would have to decide whether to intervene. A decision Russia does not want to face.
Mm.
That's from the U.S. ambassador to his government, telling them this whole expansion nonsense is going to cause a war. That was in 2008.
Mm.
They didn't care. Fast forward to 2002, a war breaks out. Right now, Ukraine is up in smoke. That's a responsible foreign policy.
And it's not even a discussion, Ahmed, about saying when you now look at the flip-flopping that I referenced a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
Being that the flip-flopping seems to be, let's not make Russia an enemy for some reason.
Yeah.
But just a year and a half in that direction, you had a president
who was
vehemently anti-Russia, vehemently anti-Putin. So what actually happened there? You speed up this direction, and then you've got Rubio showing up and speaking about, you can see it's jabs being made because, it's supposedly the UN is being used as a subversion mechanism or as a subversive, instrument against American and European, leadership in the world. So when I mentioned that leadership reference, he references the old order, which definitely speaks to colonialism.
Yep.
He then speaks to the new order, which is post 1945. Let's try and provide independence to various colonial territories around the world. And Jeff Rich makes a very good point specifically in that discussion with Pascal from Neutrality Studies about, there's 3 countries in this world, Helmut, that have what is the term he used? Non-autonomous governing territories or something in that line.
Yeah.
It's the UK, it's France, and it's the United States.
You have some island somewhere that they...
Or an island that's uninhabited by no one, but it supposedly has got a registration capabilities to register trusts and offshore businesses in that regard. It doesn't no one lives on that island. There's no one there. It's uninhabited. But supposedly this island has got that kind of a status to register such particular ventures. So three countries in this world has got offshore, non-autonomous governing territories, which is these three countries, France, United States, the UK, and the UK. Now, we've got to ask a big question here. If the whole world, which includes the global south, all of the developing world, and the global north, much of the most populated part of the world, which is also the part of the world that has the, got the highest growth and highest, you know, earning potentials and you name it. If these two parts of the world believe in the ideal of the United Nations, why is the UN, why is the United States attacking the UN for the UN's particular sort of like inclusivity mission? So it now seems, Helmut, that working on the SDGs, which is about balancing development between everyone, you don't have a Botswana getting more developed than Namibia, and Namibia still stays as it's as much of Namibia is still stuck in 1990, you know, 36 years back that way, and only Windhoek and the coast is moving forward. So you now have to ask the question, how do you then permeate all that development across the country, across SADC and so on? No. In Donald Trump's eyes and his administration's perspective, no. The UN is an evil organization. But your country started the thing.
Okay. Here's something that a lot of people, I think, missed in the Biden administration.
Yeah.
The Linda Thomas-Greenfield, who was the UN ambassador, U.S. ambassador to the UN during the Biden administration, on the discussion of the, you know, of expanding the UN Security Council to allow for representative for a lot of, you know, developing countries, blocks like, you know, like you have Africa or, you know, like you have Africa in the Caribbean, for example.
Mm.
She said something very interesting that, okay, you can bring them to the table, but don't give them veto power. Now, for an ambassador, I think she should have known that, there are 5 permanent and 15 non-permanent
members always.
There are 15 non-permanent. Those ones are on the non-permanent. They are on the Security Council, yes, but they do not have veto power. So she was already talking about, if you ask me, something that already existed. You already have a representative, you already have non-permanent members.
Mm.
Now, even if you take those 15 non-permanent members of the UN Security Council and make them permanent, if they don't have veto power, anything that you would like to achieve in terms of balancing global dominance is useless.
Exactly. And then, obviously, the best proposal that you and I obviously covered last year was the one that the Russians made, saying, yes, explore this discussion on a broader note. See who from the African perspective and from South America and from other parts of Southeast Asia should also be invited to participate on the UN Security Council as permanent members. Because you can't have one country saying no on behalf of SADC's particular needs. And then obviously South Africa went and asked BRICS guys, you know, lobby for us to be there on the Security Council.
And then
Ethiopia, that's also in BRICS, was like, hell no. Hello. Stand still. You can't just be the only person. But here's the thing. South Africa still puts in the best case because there's a reason why South Africa is in BRICS and not Ethiopia. You know, the S in BRICS is South Africa and not it being BRICS, you know, for Ethiopia, or BRICSE for Egypt, no. Or even the other, who's the other African country that was also part of BRICS? Who's the other one? Is it Algeria? It's not BRICS for that matter.
Oh boy.
Why? Because...
For one, that would sound weird.
Okay, yeah, it will sound weird. But for one, the specific reasoning had been that no one is as industrialized as South Africa. Yes, and how South Africa got there was unfortunately through a system of colonialism, you know, that actually assisted its industrial complex. But let's take a few steps backwards, Helmut. The particular concern that emanates from Rubio's speech is that Rubio came to an international platform.
Yeah.
And obviously, you can see in the boldness in which this was done, obviously hoping that Africans would not react to this discussion, by saying, it's a good thing, Europe, that you colonized Africa. It's a very good thing. It's literally a blatant thumbs up. That's what Rubio's speech, as you said,
basically says.
Yeah. And his speech represents
his government.
His government.
Yeah.
So that means Namibia has to view the American government in the context of
they're okay with colonialism.
Yeah. They are actually smiling in our faces by telling us, yeah, it was good. You know, it's a good thing that you were colonized, eh? And it's a good thing that the various negative chapters of your history had happened,
yeah,
eh, Namibia? That's good, because at least you got tar roads from it. And at least you got a jetty and a few towns, and you got your capital city from it. And, you know, you got all these, this nice layout happening, because obviously, you know, that particular remark would tell the modern Namibian government, but you didn't build anything.
Oh, yeah.
Now, if I've ever seen a smug, gaslighting kind of an attitude happening in Munich,
yeah,
at the Bayerischer Hof Hotel there in the city of Munich in Germany.
Bayerische what now?
Bayerischer Hof. That was the hotel that hosted the conference.
Why does every hotel, you know, I know with a German name ends with Hof?
Because that is what it does, Helmut.
Oh, okay. I know a few of them here in Wendel.
Yes, Helmut.
And with the Hof.
They quite blatantly have the name, that word Hof in them. But yeah. So, when obviously that happened, now, so far, the conversation that I've seen has been just between, you know, Europeans and Americans about that speech.
Yeah.
So far, I've not seen much discourse on Africans, about this speech, because I really wanted to understand the context, and there would, two, three major parts.
Like the response.
Yeah. Two, three major parts in that speech that just tells me. So this guy actually is, what's that word? He's literally glorifying a history of the world that the UN is trying to correct. The UN is trying to correct it by this SDG platform. And he's literally showing up and saying, it's a good thing that Africa was colonized. It's a good thing that Europe actually colonized great parts of the world. It's a good thing that the early American settlers, what's that term? That they colonized the other parts of the United States. Taking the parts from the Mexican-Spanish administration in the 1800s and earlier.
Yeah.
And then obviously also from the Native American groups and tribes and other groups that were obviously also driven out of their lands. Now, you then have to ask Helmut, does this literally mean in 2026,
yeah,
colonization is coming back big time?
Look at it this way. The thing about politics is, painfully, this is how it has always been. And all we just have to do is pick a history book. Is that most of the, you know, your public representatives has, call them campaign contributors.
Yeah.
Let's go to the 1800s during the abolishment of slave trade.
Yeah.
I mean, a slave trade. This is, by Britain.
Mm.
How were they able to pull that off? I mean, they were the government. They could have just said, you know, they could have just told the businesses. Just stop supporting this business. You have to change your way of trade something else, not people. They could have done that.
Yeah.
They could have just passed the law. But the thing is, they didn't do that without first making sure that, the business who were literally selling people were properly compensated. Actually, more than the people that were bought and sold.
Mm.
The British government had to borrow money to pay slave owners so that they can let their slaves go. Now, the painful part is that, for me, if you ask me, that reflects on who really hold the power.
Mm.
Not the guy sitting in parliament, unfortunately. Because that's the only way you can explain why someone sitting in parliament would risk borrowing money that they had to pay until, what, 2015?
Seriously.
they had to pay that debt until the early 2000s.
Yeah.
They had to, now they had to basically take money from some private banks and then pay those private, pay those private business owners slash business, slash slaveholders.
Mm.
So that the, damage is not caused to their business. That is the, that picture somewhat came out during the 2008 financial crisis. That mentality of you can't punish big businesses or your economy will collapse, because the British knew that.
Mm.
Their economy in the 1870s, if they just woke up one morning and unfortunately passed a law to just abolish slavery, a large chunk of their economy depended on that trade, which was heavily supported by the private sector. If they did that, their economy would have collapsed. Actually, the United States would have become a United States much faster than it, than it did.
Mm.
Now, here's the thing. This is, what happened during the abolishment of slavery, mid 1800s, somewhat, to me, somewhat became, something similar happened during the 2008 financial crisis. If you have kids at home, and you don't reprimand them, what are they gonna do? They'll just keep breaking stuff.
Yeah, well, they will just take chances, even more chances.
Even more chances, and even more chances. We're sitting at a very dangerous, time economically, because of, there's a term for these traders. Is it venture capitalists?
Yeah.
These are the guys that will basically gamble on everything.
Just for the sake of it.
Just for the sake of it.
And you don't even know what is the prospect. It's just they're gambling.
Private equity.
Yeah.
Now, those guys are just gambling. You know, you're playing a jackpot in a bar. These guys are playing a global level jackpot. And the thing is, they represent a bunch of big businesses. Even if, they cause harm to global economy and millions of people, if not billions, lose their life savings. No one is going to hold them accountable. Why? Because they are too big to fail.
Mm.
That's the term coming out of the 2008 financial crisis. And this is coming from someone who is sitting in parliament saying, those private guys that literally gambled us into this mess, you can't punish them because, well, they literally ran our economy. Again, let's go to South Korea now, shall we? Mm. Shortly after the COVID-19 pandemic, the heir to the Samsung Empire was given a presidential pardon. Why? Because the South Korean economy depends mostly, I think, on two companies. It's Honda and Samsung Electronics. These two companies, anything happens to these two companies, the South Korean economy is toast. So basically, the guys sitting in parliament know very well that if something is happening to Samsung Electronics, we're cooked. So, if they need a legal leeway, we must give it to them.
Mm.
His father was given the same, leeway. So,
and even if it's just for something like sexual harassment.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's just to one guy.
One guy.
That's just one guy. Supposedly, the company would be in harm somehow because he was instead of looking at his wife, he was looking at his secretary. And, things were just going sideways from there. And now South Korea goes like, no. It's critically important that this person must be exonerated from prison time.
Make it worse. United States, Epstein files. The names of perpetrators are redacted.
No, they are
names of victims.
No, the Oversight Committee, the Congress guys. They exposed all those guys. Those videos are there.
That's something recent, right?
Yeah, like it started happening.
Yeah, because for a very long time they kept redacting the names of guys that literally molested children.
Yeah, and it's like 6 or 7 guys, but there's even more people.
Now, what does that tell you? Okay, now he is just one honest, painful opinion on this whole, point of view on this whole Jeffrey Epstein files. Mm. None of those guys is going to jail. None.
Not
Why?
Even, not even Trump.
Because most, if not all of them, most of those guys, people in those files are either millionaires or billionaires.
Not even Trump is going to jail.
Translation? Yes, some people are above the law, unfortunately.
Another sad
thing. A pill too hard to swallow, but yeah.
Yeah. Another sad thing is also how in their country specifically, how you can literally see the discussion of fairness and good governance doesn't exist. Helmut, for 15 years, through the benefit of CNN and BBC News and Sky News International, I've had, and even Al Jazeera, I've had the opportunity of literally making an educated guess. And yes, this is just from a couch potato perspective, meaning sitting there and analyzing morality at the highest order, at the highest platform. Helmut, if you had to put the Avid guys, the Fishrod guys, in front of the big scheme things that I have, that we have seen in the past 15 years happening in the United States. Since those guys
look like a couple of angels.
No, those guys look like priests. They look like the pioneers for Christianity. I mean, even the whole Fishrod guys. The whole Fishrod guys look like pioneers for Christianity against everything that I've watched since 2008. Nah. Actually, since 2000, with the start of the Iraq and the Afghan invasions.
Well, if you're comparing that, we may as well just go to...
And that's 25 years of human history.
Man, we're going to go very far on this one.
It's 25 years of human history. Remember this, that I'm now drawing and mentioning here.
Yeah.
That means, Helmut, that any aspect of corruption in Namibia is literally kindergarten sessions. Because it's just based upon one thing. I just want money.
Yeah.
Those guys are all about going to war to get money, going to war, ensuring that your country is literally destroyed. They don't care.
Yeah. No, they don't.
They don't care. Hence the comment, obviously, that Nelson Mandela made back in the 90s or the 2000s before he passed away. There's only one ruthless country on this planet. We've seen it last year. We've seen it on 3 January. And the same country showed up 13 days ago at the Munich Security Conference and said, you know what?
Europe, how about colonialism?
Why don't you guys start thinking like you guys used to think, you know, since the 1500s?
You're forgetting the Austrian painters in that glorious history, right?
Of course.
You know, I can already picture someone in Austria listening to that speech as like, hell.
You know, we're
finally being given credit.
There is something there.
Yeah, the man has a point.
There's many points there.
Do you have any, you know, painters who failed and have also tried construction and failed?
Who forgot to register themselves with a union just to give a construction job?
Yeah.
And you know, that's all that the failed Austrian painter could have done. The reason why he was fired. His hatred for the Jews comes most from that, the construction job.
No kidding.
He was fired by the foreman, the construction foreman, who was a Jewish guy. The reason he was fired is because he didn't have a construction union membership. And obviously, as Germany was trying to rebuild after the First World War, to protect workers' rights, you needed to be in a union.
Homeboy
comes from Austria into Germany. I'm trying to do odd jobs here and there. And the guy, the foreman just asked him, do you have a union member card? Because only union members may work on these sites. Meaning, you can obviously also see how bad unions are. Just think about it philosophically. This means if you can get tied into just one job.
Yeah.
And then the unfortunate thing is if you try to move anywhere else, you'll only be known for that one job. So, in essence, he was fired because he didn't have a union membership card.
Yeah, and then world caused chaos, and now someone is saying, how about we just go back there? I mean, it was glorious. Was it? Look, it was glorious, but for who? Now, the reason why I keep going back in history when it comes to these things is because, again, being a superpower, how to put this, when it comes to, nice guys finish last, even in power. Everything that the US is doing today, the British have done when they were at the height of their empire.
Mm.
They had to do that. I mean, the chaos they caused in basically the whole world, especially the especially India. The Mau Mau rebellion, as they called it, it was an uprising. It was just people who are like, you know what, we are tired of this crap.
But Helmut, that's why I can't believe you're right to use that word uprising, because I also can't use the word rebellion if the Mau Mau are from the country.
Yeah.
Now, in many cases, obviously, when the British media try to talk to it, you know, that the British media, which is not part of the sort of like established mainstream media in the UK, they use this word rebellion every time. Now, why must I? Why is it?
I'm not rebelling. I'm just kicking out of my house.
Exactly. And why would you use the word rebellion for sort of like to say that I agreed to be subjugated?
Yeah.
That I agreed to the particular treatment that I am now experiencing. Now, I'm still not convinced. There's a hypothesis that was positioned by that Australian guy, Jeff Rich, with Pascal from Neutrality Studies about this Munich Security Conference discussion. Mm-hmm. Because the best way is that what Pascal does, Pascal looks at neutrality. He takes a neutral position, and then he tries to understand what is actually happening here. Obviously, you and I, our position, we are heavily biased because, firstly...
I don't want to be colonized. That's firstly.
Secondly, Namibia does have a colonial history. So it's not nice to think, oh, let's go back to a colonial perspective.
No,
it's not. Because people like Helmut and I were second-class citizens.
Yeah.
People like Helmut and I didn't have rights. Do you know what was the worst part even?
Time for us to be in clean winter could be running out. Chop chop right now.
Do you know what was the worst part? Uh-huh. You could only access certain areas. Time, you know, the pass system that came through? Even though, you know, I could qualify also the essence of the pass system that the South Africans introduced in the 60s and 70s with the Woodendal Plan was primarily they were trying to do, the South Africans, they were trying, to, when they developed those Bantustans, they were trying to develop the same thing that the Americans had with the Native Americans. You know, the reservations.
Yeah.
So, but the Native Americans can travel because they were in Namibia, I think 2 years back or something. They visited Sun communities here in Omaha and so on. Meaning they could get travel permits. So it just depends on obviously in which under which government's passport they got it.
Yeah.
But think back to 1960s, 1970s. Where the Bantustans were technically designed to be stateless people in a state. Now, where have you heard of something like that before, Yamon?
Typical colonialism.
No. Today. Still happening today. Who is stateless as we speak now?
No, that's Palestine.
Exactly. Even though, yes, the Palestinians are a little bit of a mischievous element. Why? They almost overthrew the Jordanian government. The current Jordanian king, what is his name? Abdullah or Muhammad? His father almost was dethroned by because of too many Palestinian refugees in Jordan. And then they said never again. Bashar al-Assad's father was almost overthrown because of too many Palestinian refugees in Syria. The Lebanon, is the way today still is the way it is today because of too many Palestinian refugees.
Now,
even Egypt.
Who is this guy? Jeffrey Sachs, I think he was in Australia at the time where he said that all the problems that you have, especially in most parts of the Middle East, can be traced back to the British.
Yeah, it's all the British's fault.
Can be traced back to the British. The Palestinians were just there having a good time. And then you have Europe now. I think it was, there's one historian, I think it was Ian Pape, I totally agree with that guy.
Yeah.
That we have a Palestinian situation now because Europe could not deal with its racism. They had one job. Now, if they really cared about the Jewish community after the Second World War. All they had to do was create a state right there in the middle and then give them that land.
No, they
would just
not.
Decided to ship them out. Why? Because unfortunately, the Jewish problem.
Yeah.
The Jewish problem. It's a very, it's a very ridiculous statement to make, but Europe has that engraved in their history.
Yeah.
The Jewish problem. This is the same thing that you see with Rwanda 1994. When you start calling a group of people as less human, that's a recipe for disaster.
Mm. But you know that it's actually older for Europe.
For Europe, it's older.
It's way older. Because
way older.
Guess who it starts with? It starts with the Russian Tsar in the 1800s. In the 1700s. So many of the European Jews, the people that now live in Israel, they were chased out of Russia.
I think it was also the French, the Spanish.
Then they were dehumanized in so many other parts of the world, even in the UK itself. And then you can obviously, when you analyze this action or this apologetic position that Europe has, they don't want, now today Spain, who's the other country? Belgium and the Netherlands, and some of the Scandinavian countries, they're now obviously changing their stance regarding Palestine. But remember that they are the reason to why Israel exists today.
Yeah.
Because literally they chased people that look like them, but just had a different religion than them.
Just to out of take their them countries. Somewhere else.
Yeah. They allowed the failed Austrian painter to commit the atrocities that he did against those people. They were responsible for it.
After the war, they were like, I know we're sorry all this happened, but now get out.
They were the ones that allowed the failed Austrian painter to literally go on his grand European scheme. Because his grand European scheme was to try and be better than Napoleon Bonaparte.
Austrian painter was awesome. It was like, you know what? You and I, there's no way I will attack you. I mean, you're my homie. 2-3 months down the line, tanks are rolling, you know. It's like, hey, you promised you're not going to attack. Well, yikes. Sorry.
I promise I won't do it again after you.
Just after this one.
Yeah. So, Europe is a big issue. But then, Europe is currently also trying to move past its particular colonial relationship with us, Africa.
Yeah.
So what is currently happening?
The US is like, no, man, you guys are doing it wrong.
Not just that, Helmut. US is busy with something else that's very funny that I saw popping up also. They are, you remember the USAID discussion? That was put a stop to at the start of last year?
Yeah.
So now the U.S. has this direct policy of helping with the health sectors of Africa, but it's known as the U.S. America First something strategy, something like that. It came out literally the same time as that other strategy that you and I did, the foreign policy strategy.
Oh, there is the national security strategy.
Yeah, the national security strategy. It literally came out the same time in September. That strategy document, Helmut. This one of the foreign aid one.
Yeah.
Which is known as America First, whatever, something.
Mm.
It speaks of US to help with pandemics and other medical emergencies happening somewhere else around the world. So as to say, if Ebola breaks out somewhere in West Africa, we must find a way of insulating the US against the Ebola outbreak. Yes, of course, indeed, you put up the necessary screening measures, like what we experienced under COVID as well, and all those other particular discussions. But before we actually continue, we've got to take some live reads, guys. Wilwitsche University, for the 2026 applications that are now extended for the Faculty of Health Sciences for the following courses. Certificate in Health Science Foundation, Diploma in Environmental Health Science, Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing, Postgraduate Diploma in Mental Health, Postgraduate Diploma in Occupational Health and Safety, Master of Science in Occupational Health and Safety, and the Master of Public Health. For more information, call 081-403-6406. Wilwitsche University, where everyone is an achiever.
Get your kicks from ShopRite Liquor Shops. Smirnoff 1818 Original Vodka for $159.99. Harrier's Whiskey and Gordon's Dry Gin for $179.99 each. KWV 3-Year Old Brandy for $199.99. Rich Liu Brandy for $189.99. And J&B Scotch Whiskey for just $239.99. Please don't drink and drive. ShopRite Liquor Shops care. So the glorification of colonialism. Again, a lot of people are cooking Marco Rubio. I'm like, okay, first you have to understand how countries work. That speech was written and it was agreed upon. The Trump administration put that man on a plane and tell him, this is what we want. We want you to go and tell the world that is what we stand for. Yeah. So.
Go and do your job.
Just go and do your job.
Don't ask anyone.
And he went there and he did his job. Now,
just do it.
The Munich Security Conference, Anthony Blinken, 2014. Anthony Blinken said something that also just dominated most of mainstream media. When he said, it was also a 2024 Munich Security Conference. That's where he said, when it comes to the world of politics, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu.
That's always Africa.
So yeah. Was he wrong? No, he wasn't. He was just pointing out the harsh reality of how the world of geopolitics work. At least, that's if you bend down all the international institutions, that's where we're going. Now, that from the look of things, the delegitimization of a lot of institutions that are supposed to, that holds post-World War II order. Yeah. Now, of course, I'm saying call it because if you ask a lot of Middle Eastern countries, they will tell you that when was their order? There was no global order. For Namibia, there was global order since 1990. Yeah. For the most part of, from the 1945 to 1990, there was no order. The global order discussion can be heard in a lot of different ways depending on which part of the country you're coming from or which part of the world you're coming from. A lot of developing countries will tell you, there was not a lot of order for a very long time. At least for us.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if you are, even if you ask Europeans about, the glory days of old, women will have a whole different point of view on that discussion. And those ones that were shipped from Europe and then, to a prison colony of Australia will have a whole different point of view. They're not going to tell you that there was a time when everything was just silver and gold. No. It was silver and gold if you were part of the aristocratic family. If you were not, it was bad.
Yeah, it was. Almost.
Yeah, there was a time when the river, what river is it? Is the River Thames. Yeah. Where all the sewer was basically channeled to that river. The water was undrinkable. The smell was unbelievable. And that caused a lot of diseases.
No, it still is. It still is. It still is bad.
Really? Jeez, okay.
That river and the River Seine in Paris.
So.
Yeah, you don't want to even accidentally trip and fall into those rivers. I mean, Hamo, just go watch on YouTube tourist reviews about London and Paris. They hate those two cities. With Paris, it stinks. With London, just don't trip and fall in the river.
One thing about Paris that I actually find very interesting, at least philosophically, metaphorically, is that of the Paris catacombs. They have about 300 kilometers of tunnel.
Yeah.
Yeah. underground that are filled with what, like stacked up, you know, bones. Because I think in the 1600s, much of their grave sites were running out of space, so they decided to dig out all those dearly departed that left the planet a little while ago, and then took all the bones and basically stacked them, you know, to make room for the new guys.
Yeah,
that are kicking the bucket. Recently, in other words, if you died a long time ago, we can disrespect you. But if you just died yesterday, a little bit of respect.
Yeah, you still have a chance. You know, I still enjoy your resting spot.
Yeah, resting, you know, in peace. Now,
for now.
Yeah. So the thing is, the whole idea of there was a time when everything was glorious, good old days. Oh no, that statement is very subjective. Good old days. For who? You can just say that in Namibia. If you are one of those people that somewhat had, you know, colonial homies, and you benefited from the colonial regime, be it of South Africa or any country that was colonized, you can say, there was a time when we had glory days. But a lot of people that were fighting for the liberation of that country would beg to differ. Assuming they don't slap you. Would beg to differ. There was no glory days. Now, I think that's where, if you look at international institutions like the UN, that's where they come in. That's basically what they try to achieve with their SDG. How about we just all live happily together in harmony? George Carlin was like, have you ever realized that anyone that tells us to live together in peace, we just kill them? Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther, our Lord and Savior. I mean, he was like, I come from heaven to represent all of you. What do we have to do? You have to live together. It's like, oh no, you're crossing the line there, buddy.
You surely cannot ask us to be
you
peaceful.
You can't tell us to be, to live in harmony with each other.
That's just not
And how he kept pushing it, and we're like, okay, fine. We'll just crucify you. And never saw him again. Now, so going to...
That's you, Helmut. That's you.
Okay, that's not funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look, our Lord and Savior gave me a talent of of comedy. Now I'm using it against him. Okay, break.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Lipura nengelo wapungwa Eva Tero ulikoni maondu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo ihewetike kovano ile koshiwala. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ujendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kongerewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM. The Eye.
Welcome back. 7 minutes to the hour of six, and that's just, you know, let's put all that aside. Life reads before we continue.
Yeah. Vilvitsa University for the 2026 applications that are now extended for the Faculty of Health Sciences for the following courses. Certificate in Health Science Foundation, Diploma in Environmental Health Science, Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing, Postgraduate Diploma in Mental Health, Postgraduate Diploma in Occupational Health and Safety, Master of Science in Occupational Health and Safety, and the Master of Public Health. For more information, call 081-403-6406. Vilvitsa University, where everyone is an achiever.
Get your kicks from ShopRite Liquor Shops, a Smirnoff 1818 original vodka for $159.99. Harry's whiskey and Gordon's dry gin for $179.99 each. KWV 3-year-old brandy for $199.99. Richelieu brandy for $189.99. And J&B Scotch Whiskey for just $239.99. Please don't drink and drive. ShopRite Liquor Shop. Care. So, 6 minutes to the hour of six, and today is Friday.
Yeah.
Glory days. That statement, very subjective.
I mean,
very subjective. Let me give you now two examples. Now, see, back in the 1400s, yeah, let's go with the 1450s.
Mm.
Yeah, 1450s, mid 1400s. A Portuguese guy went to the Vatican and was like, so your Holy See, representative of God on Earth, would you mind if I just went out there to colonize a bunch of people? And he was like, no, really, I don't. You can just go ahead. Yeah. Now, just a couple of years after that, in the early 1450s, mm. another English guy goes to the very same source and go like, you mind if I divorced my wife? And the same institution was like, no, you can't. Now, at this point, if I was a Henry VIII, I would have gone with, hang on a second, you gave that guy a go-ahead to go and colonize a bunch of people, but I can't get a divorce. So, the God we worship is okay with colonialism, but divorce, that's where he draws the line.
Yeah.
That's what you're telling me. Yeah. The bro was like, okay, fine, I'll just start my own church and, you know, divorce my wife. And then started his own church and then started decapitating his wife instead of divorcing. That guy was deranged. Now.
And which actually didn't lead to any particular sort of like, what do they call it? Lasting change situation. I mean, obviously he passed away and obviously that church survived, but then it once again got absorbed into the Catholic Church again.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you must give me a sign. Bro thought women were photocopy machines. Now, it's either you give me your son, and you want to do a glory days. For who?
Helmut. Dude, I don't know.
Queen Elizabeth I, that guy is his father. That guy.
Mm.
His first act of... fatherhood, ultimate responsibility towards his daughter was jail her. Okay, no, step one, decapitate the mother,
mm-hmm.
and then step two, jail her. Then, look, when you are saying glory days, pick a history book for the love of God, because the LGBTQ community will punch you in the face. Women will punch you in the face.
Mm.
Black people will punch you in the face. They will tell you glory.
The whole African continent,
Asia.
Would want to come and punch you in the face.
He would want to punch you in the face because they would all be asking the same question. Glory days.
For who? Of what? Which glory days?
Which glory days?
Yeah.
Now, glory days there meant you had to be, you know, if you wanted to, you know, if you wanted to enjoy these days, you would have to meet mostly two criteria.
Mm.
You have to be a man who is white, actually three, and loaded.
Mm.
Yeah.
And you could join the army, and then you had various particular perks, and anyone else didn't exist.
Yeah.
And then you could just broadly apply terra nullius. Yeah.
A land without a people.
Yeah, that's the other thing that I also wanted to highlight.
Yeah.
Specifically that it seems it's only the glory days guys who applied terra nullius, but you and your whole tribe were standing there looking at them.
I know the first thing they did with the King Afonso of Portugal was they redefined the meaning of human being.
That too.
Yeah, because when they showed up in Africa, for example, they looked at this land as a land without a people. Why? Because the definition of human being they came with did not include anyone that was not light skinned.
Mm. So we were doomed.
Yeah, yeah. They were like, okay, we see this land, but we don't see you. Because according to our definition of human beings, you are not one of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what women were a tiny bit, just a little under, if those women were white. Yeah. And also loaded. Did I mention loaded? You had to be a male, white, and loaded. Now, those ones can look back and say glory days. Can look back to this history and say glory days. But black people can't do that. Women can't do that. LGBTQ community can't do that. Asians can't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can't do that. So, favorite part is a Cuban immigrant with a nice position in the White House thinks you can refer to those days as glory days. No, they weren't. They were if you're a white, rich man. If you were a white, not rich man, you had your kids working in the mines. Why do you think we have the international labor laws? That's where they're coming from. People wanted to make money so bad, they didn't care about, you know, they didn't worry how many kids were dying of lung disease getting coal mine. You know, tunneling in coal mines to get the coal. Glory days. For who?
I mean, Namut, it's still going to stay perplexing, specifically the speech that Rubio gave. We've obviously seen 3 January so far, so that means glory days for is somehow active. Yeah, this is the thing I wanted to mention. Let me just look up my search history specifically. There was this the America First Global Health Strategy. That's the strategy's name. Do you know what the strategy?
Why the heck would you sign something like that?
Do you know who signed it?
Who is that?
Kenya, Nigeria. So what happens is they government-to-government assistance by the Americans, which is obviously good because that's also how Namibia and China operate. That's how Namibia and the EU is operating.
But does the Namibia-China agreement say China first?
No, not really.
Exactly. Now,
no, not really. You are right. And primarily, it also sets a discussion of, what do you call it? Some sort of a...
Reciprocity?
No, some sort of a benefit element.
Mutual benefit.
No, not mutual. You already get the benefit of getting direct U.S. Foreign assistance in terms of your own health sector. So there should be some sort of a...
it's transactional.
Yeah. But, of course. But transactional in the sense of, okay, then you've got to allow American businesses to operate in your economy or stuff like that.
So you can't have your own businesses.
Now, apparently the Kenyan courts has ruled that agreement that Ruto signed.
Of course it's
as Ruto. It's either Zimbabwe or Kenya, but one of them has ruled that agreement as unconstitutional.
Do you really need a court to tell you that as a president?
I thought they had also had attorney generals.
Every president on the planet I know at least has an attorney general.
Accessible.
They are the ones you go to when you are making government level decisions because they are going to come with legal implications.
So, yeah, it seems that, yeah.
So anything for a Range Rover with a license plate. Custom license plate.
Basically,
Basically. Because, look, if you're a president and you sign a bias agreement, look, gone are the days where I was calling, you know, I was looking at politicians as, you know, dumb or something. No. When something that's done by an adult who is in position of power, they're just being greedy. They're not being stupid. They're just being greedy. In other words, someone like that is willing to sell you to make a buck. Yeah.
Yeah.
4 minutes into the hour of 6. Glory days. Again, for who? But that brings us to the end of Home Run for today. Until Sunday, when I'm, you know, when I'm talking about divorce. Yeah. Sunday I'm talking about divorce.
divorce?
Yeah. You know, a lot of commentators are providing different commentaries on the whole divorce statistics, and I'm just going to go through all those commentaries with my own music. That's on Sunday. Until then, you'll stay tuned.
Guys,
for business
I'm,
and
guys, I'm really sorry, Ned, but I can't apologize for what Helmut is going to do to you on Sunday. Yeah. On that note, guys, let's see each other again, same time, same place next week, or otherwise, it's on Sunday morning as well, 5 to 7.
Yeah.